Hello, and welcome to Covered, a conversation about books with the people who, for this week, read them. I'm your host, Harry Marks, and today's guest is someone I'm very excited to talk to. She's a co-host on the very popular podcast, Books on the Nightstand, and the person who actually turned me on to today's topic of discussion, Anne Kingman. Anne, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Harry. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure completely. So I first heard about the book that we're talking about, and if you haven't listened yet, you might want to go to episode 9A, which is the syllabus for today's discussion. We're talking about Marie Kondo's The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, which is, for all intents and purposes, a self-help book, but not in the usual, you know, fluffy, granola-munching, self-help kind of way. The way it's geared is actually very, very simple. It's, you know, it's about cleaning and organizing your life, but not in a way where you are forced to go out to the Container Store and buy a whole bunch of boxes and put stuff in. It's really about cleaning the stuff out of your life that does not bring you joy. So her method, to put it as simply as possible, is bring all of the items out that you need for one category, for example, clothing, all of the clothes into one space, pick up each item, and then ask yourself, does this spark joy? And if it doesn't, either toss it or donate it. And so ever since I've read this book, I've been going through my house, much to my wife's chagrin, and cleaning up as much as possible. I actually culled about two-thirds of my wardrobe. So I yesterday dropped off two big donation bags for the clothing donation box down the street. And I guess we'll start it off with, I first heard about the book on your podcast, Anne. So how did you first hear about it?
Well, just a little bit of background. So my day job, not associated with Books on the Nightstand, is that I'm a sales manager for Penguin Random House, which is one of the largest book publishers. And I work with bookstores. Mm-hmm. And it's a huge company. And so it consists of many, many publishers. And because there are so many books that we publish every year, the publishing list is divided, the adult publishing list for Random House is kind of divided into two parts. So my colleague and podcast co-host, Michael Kindness, sells one of the imprints called 10 Speed Press. I do not sell that. But we had a presentation to do to booksellers at a trade show, and only one of us was able to present. And so Michael chose some titles for me to present. And among those titles was The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. And so in order to present it, I grabbed a copy and started reading it. And my usual method in this is to just really read, you know, 10 or 15 pages to get a flavor for the book. And then there are other things that I can do to learn about the book, but I don't read every single book. But I fell into this one and I absolutely loved it. And it was this book was published internationally first. And so they did some sample copies and they were kind of rare and Michael wanted his back and I wouldn't give it back to him because I fell in love with this book so much. And it was one of those things that I don't know had I not fell into it that way that I even would have picked it up.
After I'd heard about the book on your podcast, I was looking through the shelves and I was trying to find it because I had heard a couple of people talk about it. And I couldn't find it. It's a very inconspicuous book. It doesn't, the imagery on the cover is, I have it here. It's basically like a blue and white cloud, mm-hmm. With red text. And that's about it. It's a small book. It's a small hardcover. And it's pretty nondescript from the looks of things. You know, if you weren't looking for it, you might go right by it.
Yeah, it's something that in the industry we call it gifty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
It's a small hardcover. It does not look at all like so many of the books that you see in the self-help section, which tend to be white, mm-hmm. with type and then the photo of the author, if the author has somewhat of a platform. This one, it's what we call paper overboard, so there's no separate jacket. And it's a smaller size, and it's actually really affordable. It's $16.99 for a hardcover is the list price, which is about what paperbacks go for these days. And so it's one of those things that's just kind of an impulsy thing. A lot of booksellers put it at the front counter or put it on their gift tables because it did come out shortly before the holidays,
right?
The winter holidays. And so it's one of those books that a lot of people, I think, found by accident. And it's also one of those books, it's a fast read, it's about 200 pages, and you want to tell people about it. And so it's been an amazing success. It has exceeded anybody's wildest expectations. And there's just so many more people that will discover it. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, definitely. If you go into Barnes & Noble now, it's on their Books Mom Will Love for Mother's Day book table. And I'm hoping they also put it on the Father's Day one, because it's definitely not just for moms. It's for everybody.
Well, I was taken by the fact that you said you were tidying much to your wife's chagrin, because I sort of wish that my husband would go on some rampant tidying mission without me nagging.
Yeah, I've tried putting my son's clothes away. He's 8 months old, so he's got a lot of baby clothes and stuff floating around. And I started folding things in her method, and my wife looked at me and said, put it down now. You're not doing that. So it's been a bit of a fight. But actually, it was funny. Yesterday, she pulled out a shirt she had purchased and didn't know if she wanted it. And I asked her, well, does it bring you joy? And she said, no. And then she shoved it back in the bag, and we returned it. Eventually, I'm sure I'll win this battle, but it's going to take some going.
I think that's the life-changing part of the book, because I found the same thing in my world. So, confession, I also purged a lot of my wardrobe. Mm-hmm. However, despite what Marie Kondo says, I did look at that as permission to go buy new clothes. But I have to say, I've been buying them with that thought, does this bring me joy, immediately in mind. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I do is when I try it on, a lot of times I would try something on and be like, oh, it's okay. It's not perfect, but it fits something I need. In this case, I'm being much, much more particular. And I think that has saved me a lot of money, and also a lot of just, I don't think I'm going to have bags of clothes to donate in the near future.
What were your thoughts going into reading it? Were you skeptical about it when you first heard about it?
I really didn't know much about it when I started reading it. Although I would have gone in as a skeptical reader had mm-hmm. someone said, here, you need to read this. But I think what grabbed me was the author's voice. And I think that's what makes this unique is that, first of all, she's a very interesting character herself. Mm-hmm. She talks a lot in the book about how she started organizing and being interested in tidying from the age of 5, and that her hobby when she would come home from school would be to clean out cupboards and organize things. So that is completely not me. So that fascinated me, because I don't think I've ever known anybody quite like that. And so her voice makes this very, very personal. And it's something that she just has this kind of warmth about her that made it so engaging. So I guess I liked her method. The does it bring me joy is really what drew me in and made me decide to try this method.
Yeah.
However, as I was doing it, I actually found something for me that was even more valuable in her method. And that, and this is where it gets a little woo-woo, and I'm completely not a woo-woo person at all. But she talks a lot about how you should thank your items and your objects.
Yes.
Particularly when you're discarding them if you have a shirt that you don't want to keep anymore because it doesn't bring you joy, you thank it for a job well done and put it in the appropriate bag for donating or discarding. And on the page, that struck me as a little bit ridiculous. However, when I was actually working on this, it made it so much easier, because it was the kind of thing where if I pulled out a shirt that I had spent way, more money on it than I felt would warrant giving it away, I spent so much money on this shirt and I only wore it once, even though it doesn't bring me joy, in my old life, I would hang it back in the closet because mm-hmm. I had just spent too much money to get rid of it. But I was able to say it filled the need of buying it at that moment, whether I needed it for a particular occasion or I was having a bad day and buying it had made me feel better that day, whatever. That piece of clothing had done its job, and now I could thank it for doing that job and send it on its way. And it really helped me get rid of so many things that I think I would have just put back in the closet in any other way.
That's something I haven't done yet. I too, when I was reading that, I was like, this is not me, and I'm not going to thank the things I own before I get rid of them.
You need to thank them, Harry.
I do. I think I do, because hearing that, yeah, it makes a lot of sense, actually, thanking it for whatever purpose it served at the time, and then makes it easier to part with.
It's not actually the verbalization of the thanks. Right. I think that resonated with me as much as just making me think about it and think about it in a different way, that, everything sort of had a reason for being, and if it had outlived that reason, then it was time for it to go.
No, I absolutely agree. There was another in a video she did. There was she was helping someone who worked for New York Magazine clean up her books. And so she pulls out all the books off the shelf and she says, okay, we need to wake up the books. And so she knocks on the stacks of books on the table, and that's supposed to wake them up and I guess prep them for the process of tidying. And I was like, okay, I guess if that's your thing. She's very big on personification of the objects we're getting rid of.
Yeah, and a lot of that comes from her tradition of Shintoism, I believe. Right. And so if I don't know a whole lot about the Japanese culture, but I know just enough to know that it does sort of make sense in that regard. And so it's not completely out there like some American readers might think it is. And she explains that in the book too.
Yeah, there's a definite culture clash, I think, for some people who might read this and you know, might think, this isn't for me. But, you know, try it and see what happens.
Well, and I think that what is implied in the book, but not necessarily spelled out, is the fact that in Japan, they're dealing with much smaller spaces.
Yes.
And so the need to be organized, I think, is in many, many cases higher than here in the United States, where, you know, here I am living in a house with a bedroom that isn't really used for anything more than my computer and the occasional guest, you know, so I do have places to store it. So there's not as much of a necessity, but what she really talks about is sort of the psychic airiness and sense of calmness that you get from not living in a cluttered space.
Right.
And that, I think, has more resonance with American readers than how do you live in a 10 by 13 room with all of your belongings.
Right. And if you're going to live in that small of a space, it should be filled with things that bring you joy, not just things that you have. Now, when you were reading, did you start the tidying process before or after you finished the book?
Oh, it was several months after I'd read it.
Oh, wow, okay.
It took me a while to sort of think about it and mull it over and plan my approach. You know, she has a very specific order in which she suggests you do things.
Yes.
And I'm a little bit of a rebel because I'm not going to follow her specific order.
I didn't either.
Okay. and it's actually, it's much smaller than I need. I wish, in a sense, that there was a much longer list to follow and order. But, you know, she says start with clothing first, which is absolutely what I did. And I think that that is the best place to start, because it does get you in that practice of asking yourself, does this bring joy? And clothing, because it's so personal, you don't have to consider anybody else that you live with, in your family, whatever. It's just, you know, it's your shirt. Does it bring you joy? Now, in the case of your eight-month-old, that may be a little different. It's like, well, okay, who should get joy from this item that said baby is wearing?
Right.
But in general, clothing is so personal that it's an easy answer.
Yeah,
as opposed to a vase in my living room, that it may not bring me joy, but it might bring my husband joy.
And I think with small children, especially, it's I don't apply it to this because A, they outgrow everything so quickly. You don't even have enough time to ask, does it bring me joy, until they're in the next size. And then we plan on having a second one, so we're just holding on to everything anyway in case we have, you know, another little boy, or you know, we don't want to have to rebuy everything again.
Right.
So I think for kids, it's a different beast, but it's great to start for adults, because it's like in my house, clothes everywhere, every room of the house, there's something. And my wife is always saying, this summer, I'm going to go through my closet, I'm going to clean everything out. It's one of those things that for me, I put off forever. It's just, you know, you don't want to dig through your closet and pull everything out and go through it. And then if you don't have a method, if it's a matter of, well, I might need this in the future, or I didn't wear this enough, or I didn't wear it at all, there's still tags on it, you're going to say to yourself, I need to hold on to it. And then what's the point of even pulling everything out of the closet? So by going in with this mentality of, does it spark joy? Does it make me happy? I know right off the bat what's going and what's staying. And it was a lot easier for me than I thought it would be to get rid of everything. And then from there, I was like, all right, time to tackle the basement.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was the other thing. She says, don't do it by room by room, because we store similar items in different rooms. But this is where I'm rebelling, and I'm actually – I can't just pull things out of the basement according to category. I actually have to purge the basement entirely in one shot, or else it'll never get done.
Yeah, I think, and again, I think that's a function of the amount of space that we have in this country.
Yeah.
And the way that certain areas in our homes can get filled with all kinds of things that are unclassifiable or hard to classify.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had a room like that, and you know, it's got all kinds of stuff in it. And I am going to try to do it by category, but that requires me mentally thinking about, okay, what is in that room exactly?
Right.
But the first thing that I did was suitcases. For some reason, our family of four had about 96 suitcases and duffel bags and things of various. So that was a lot of what was in that room, and I knew a lot of what was in that room were suitcases. And so that seemed like a very easy thing to do very quickly.
Wow.
And yeah, so, you know, she says do it quickly, do it all at once, but her quickly is 6 months.
That's right, yeah. Her quickly is a six-month period.
I'm probably on month four now, and really all I've done is, well, my closet, which was huge, and I was so glad there was nobody here to see how embarrassed I was when all of my clothes were on the bed. I mean, it was just a mountain. It was mortifying. But then I've been doing little categories since. So the next thing I'm going to tackle are all our household cleaning products, which are scattered all over the house. And I probably have 10 bottles of window cleaner. And really, how many do I need? One. You know, can I keep a small amount of cleaning products in a central place? And if someone has to walk downstairs to clean the upstairs bathroom, then too bad.
Right. No, yeah, I've been doing so instead of all the cleaning products, I've been doing all the linen closets at once. So I've been pulling everything out of one linen closet at a time and just going to my wife, yes or no, yes or no, and throwing it out. If it's expired, it goes. If I don't use it, it goes. If she used it once, it goes. How did you feel after you purged her closet of everything?
It felt great. I felt a little bit nervous because I had I did it in January in the winter, the dead of winter. And I think it was good, but what happened was I realized I had a business trip to Florida coming in March, and I had not really left myself with any spring or summer clothes, which is not bad because I think all the things that I discarded did need to go, and had I remembered that trip, I might have hung on to them. But it did set off a little bit of a shopping spree, I do confess. I don't really recommend people take, and neither does Marie Kondo, you know, don't take this as license to go buy all new clothes.
Right.
But I do have to say, I love all the clothes I bought, and I wore them, and I'm much happier. And it's just really nice being able to walk into my closet and see everything that I have, and it's all organized, and I know that pretty much anything I put on, I'm going to like.
Now, have you been doing her folding method for clothes?
I've tried. I don't have drawers that are deep enough, though. So I ended up, like, my t-shirts, I have them folded in her method, but within a large shoebox kind of thing that fits on a shelf.
Oh, okay.
And I will confess that it's a little bit difficult to always put them back that way when I'm putting my laundry away or whatever. I think I need to spend some time and kind of redo it. But I'm also, my daughter is trying to do her room. And I'm thinking that once she gets done with her clothes, she's going to have an empty dresser that I can then move into my closet and have drawers, which is what Marie Kondo recommends. So
right,
that might make it easier.
That's another one of those. They're very limited on space, so they're big on putting chests in closet or dressers in closets. It works for me for my sock drawer. So my socks, underwear, and undershirts are all in one drawer. And it works really well because in the morning, I get up at 5 every morning. And so I'm dressing half in the dark. And it's very easy now for me to see what socks go with what tie. And I'm a big menswear enthusiast. So for me, everything has to match and okay. Coordinate.
Well, and it definitely creates more space, it seems. I mean, not only getting rid of things, but then the things that you have. I do have one drawer that I have all my workout clothes in. And I was able to put everything in one drawer. All my t-shirts, all my yoga pants and workout shorts and all that. Which before it took up almost an entire dresser. Mm-hmm. And I can see everything, but I also slimmed down. I was like, okay, if I go to the gym at the very most, I go 4 days a week. Usually it's not, sadly, even that often. So I thought, okay, well, how many items do I really need? Do I need 72 t-shirts? No, I need like my 5 favorite ones, and I do laundry.
Right. Today's episode is brought to you by Nocht Sound Engineering. Nocht helps you record, edit, and produce great podcasts, streamlining the process so you can deliver high-quality shows to your audience. Whether you just need to trim the ums and you knows, or you're looking to set up the perfect recording rig, Nocht has it all covered. Speaking of, Knock makes every episode of this podcast sound terrific. Consider this more than just an advertisement. Consider it an endorsement. So if you're looking to bring your podcast to the next level, contact Knocked Sound Engineering today at knockedsound.com. That's N-A-C-H-T sound.com. Knocked, more than a stack of tracks.
When you were doing this, did you try to get your family involved at first?
No. No.
Okay, so this
no. and
is just
she
you.
And she warns against that, actually. She says that if you do it, they will just sort of naturally start to pick it up.
I wish that were true.
Yeah. Well, I have had this conversation. So books are a problem, and I'm assuming we're going to get to books at some
yes.
point in this conversation. But that is the pain point in both of my daughters' rooms. They're both big readers, and they both have sort of unlimited access to free books, and so that creates a problem. And my youngest daughter is a big rereader. She loves to hold on to things she loves. And I said to her, well, you know, you've got to get rid of some things. Ask yourself, you know, put them all on the floor. This is what Marie Kondo says. Put all your books on the floor and then ask yourself, does this spark joy? My daughter's insisting that everything she has sparks joy.
I feel her pain.
I know. Yeah, books are tough. So she's been resisting that, but it's sort of become a family joke now. You know, I'll say something and one of them will say, well, does that spark joy, Mom? So they're getting it even if they don't realize they are.
That's great. Yeah, but they'll apply that later, I'm sure.
I think they will, whether they really want to or not. I think it's kind of getting ingrained in there. My husband's just oblivious. He doesn't care.
Yeah, I went through my shelves and I found maybe 7 or 8 books I donated to my library yesterday. And I was feeling upset because I wanted to donate more, but I looked through my shelves and I'm like, I really like all of these books I have, and I can't bear to get rid of them yet. That's my biggest weakness is books.
Well, and yes, I think probably a lot of people who listen to your podcast, and certainly mine as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you said though, and I'm with you here, by the way, but playing devil's advocate, pretending I'm Marie Kondo, you said you looked through your shelves and chose some to donate. Now that is not her method. Her method is you decide what to keep after you remove everything from your shelves.
Exactly.
Where Marie and I part philosophies is, and again, this is a very personal thing. She says, if you haven't read it, you're not going to, and get rid of it. That might work for, as we call them, civilian readers
right.
who buy a book because they want to read it at the time. But I have so many books that have flooded in from just things that I've wanted to read, but because I have to read a lot for work, I haven't yet gotten to them. There are books that, you know, I know that I will read someday. I have a retirement bookcase that is all the books that I have no intention of reading until I am retired and can do nothing but sit and read for hours at a time. I'm sort of saving them for there. So there are some sort of special considerations, and I'm not sure if that's just an excuse. You know, I have the complete short story collections of some of my favorite authors, and that's something that at some point I will dip in and out of. I haven't touched it yet, but I know that that doesn't mean it's not going to. But I did slim down, and again, she says take all your books from all over the house and put them in a pile and decide what you're going to keep. I am doing it bookcase by bookcase, and I did manage to do one bookcase. And that was a little bit easier because that was a case of books that contains advanced reading copies of things that are or were not yet out. Some we get sent to the from the publishers for our podcast. A lot of publishers will send books. I'm sure you get them too, hoping that we'll talk about them on the podcast. And then other books from work and other things that friends have sent. And so those were the kinds of things that were easier for me to get rid of because in some cases the advanced reading copy said, you know, this book is coming out in 2007. And if I haven't read the advanced reading copy and haven't bought the book or read the actual book that came out in 2007, I figure that's nothing that I need to keep. So I was able to slim down from 5 shelves to 1.5.
Wow.
But I think that was the easiest.
Yeah, I guess if it's related to the podcast or something that's time sensitive, then it's probably easier to get rid of than something you've been holding on to because you've really been wanting to read it.
Cookbooks are next on my list.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, we don't have a lot of cookbooks.
I have so many cookbooks. And honestly, at this point, I cook from so few. I'm not quite sure how I'm going to tackle it. Part of me says, if I've never cooked from it, just let it go. But that's also something I'm going to have to do in conjunction with my husband, because he will occasionally pull something out. And he remembers where a lot of the recipes that are now kind of in our repertoire originally came from. So I think that's the kind of thing that I have to mull over just a tiny bit more. But I do need to get, I have two full bookcases of cookbooks, and that's just way too many.
Wow, that is a lot.
Yeah. Well, they accumulate over the years.
Yeah.
And now, we do like to cook, but, you know, when I need a recipe for chicken fricassee, I'd go online.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing. And I've been, what I do is I store them in Evernote. But speaking of the digital, that's one thing she doesn't touch on. I don't know if you've heard of the program Instapaper or Pocket, something that.
Yes.
Okay. So one thing I did applying her method was, you know, does this article I saved 3 years ago bring me joy? And I went through and I purged almost my entire Instapaper backlog and just got rid of everything I didn't want to read anymore or anything I'd planned on reading but didn't. And it feels a lot better knowing that that also is not waiting in my TBR pile.
Yeah, the whole digital life thing is, maybe that's her next book. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, well, if you think about it, I don't know if you're a big Kindle reader. I know you're a big paper reader, but with the Kindle, there's always a sale or something, you know, such and such is on sale for free or 99 cents. And so I know a lot of people on Twitter I've spoken to have a problem of hoarding books that they buy on Amazon. And then the problem there is, unlike a bookshelf that you walk by every day, you forget what's in your Kindle if you're not looking for it. But Amazon doesn't give you any possibility of donating that book or giving it away to someone else, because you're basically leasing it from them.
Right, right.
So that's one thing I'd like to see Amazon solve, because if you have these books you're never going to get to read, you should be able to give them away to someone else to read, you know, so they're actually being used.
Yeah, that's a tricky thing. It's not actually an Amazon problem. I think, you know, different publishers have different restrictions, and a lot of it is, you know, the whole digital, I mean, you can't really lend digital music either, or give it away unless it's non-DRM. So it's a whole, it's a mess.
Most music now is DRM, is non-DRM. Anything on iTunes, you can actually, it's all non-DRM, I believe.
And that's up to the original, you know, the labels, I think, iTunes didn't solve that. That was a decision made by the record labels. And so whatever happens in the publishing industry with eBooks will sort of be determined, publisher by publisher. Each one sort of does its own thing and has its own practices. And there are some, I know, Angry Robot, for instance, I believe has, non-DRM files that you can share. Don't quote me on that. I think it's Angry Robot.
Yeah, actually, one of the books I donated was an Angry Robot book, and I believe, yeah, that's true. You can get their stuff non-DRM, because Chuck Wendig is a big fan of that.
Yes, yes. But I think the whole concept of digital space is interesting in itself. Does it cause me psychic discomfort to know that I have 17 notebooks in Evernote that contain things that I don't even know? Honestly, no. Right now, my focus is really on making our physical space more comfortable and more attractive and calm, so that I can feel, you know, that feeling like when you walk into a really nice hotel and it's just like you like breathe this sigh of, because you just, there's nothing out of place and there's nothing that you have to do at that very moment. You know, there's nothing you need to dust or clean or anything. Like, that's the state I want to get to. And my digital life will never, ever, ever get there. So I'm not even going to pretend.
Yes.
The other thing that I have seen in terms of family is I have two daughters. They're 3 years apart, but they're about the same size. And so there's a lot of trading back and forth. If somebody doesn't want a shirt, the other person will take it. And I used to kind of pressure the older one to give stuff to the younger one, and I would pressure the younger one to take it. And I've stopped doing that. It's very much a, you know, they offer, and even if it's a great shirt or something, if neither one of them wants it, then out it goes. So that's, they've seen that a little bit too. So I do think that family members will get on board just slowly.
Now, aside from family members, has anyone else that you've recommended the book to jumped on board? Have they really run with it?
Some have said. We've never had this follow-up conversation to see exactly how it's gone. But yeah, I've heard from a lot of people that they've been intrigued and that they're going to start. Pretty much everybody starts with their clothes. And then I've noticed a big stall after that. And I've had the same thing. It's just, seems to take so much out of you when you do your clothes, especially most of the people I'm thinking of are women. And we tend to have a lot more clothes than most men, although I know I'm generalizing. but it seems like it's a bigger, it's exhausting, you know, when you try to do it. I mean, it took me a full day from morning to night. And I did everything that was in, you know, all of my clothing, all of my categories, including my shoes. But I didn't want to do a thing the next day. It just took so much out of me. Even though it wasn't hard. It wasn't physical.
It's all emotional. Getting rid of stuff you haven't worn. I mean, the guilt I felt getting rid of 5 suits that I know I was never going to wear again for various reasons, because of damage, or I had outgrown them, or whatever it was. I was just like beside myself getting rid of these suits. But then I got to go out and buy new suits. So.
Yeah, I think that's the big danger of this book.
Yeah, definitely.
But if you like what you bought and you're happy in it, and, you know, hopefully nobody's going into debt to replace wardrobes. I mean, I think hopefully people will do so, you know, responsibly. do you have any big categories of things to purge that are sort of waiting for you that you're reluctant to tackle?
I know photographs are a big one. It used to be the photographs were all of our pets, and now the photographs are all of our child. So there, but we've got shoeboxes and shoeboxes and shoeboxes of hard copy photos from our wedding, family gatherings, all this stuff. They're taking up an entire top of our closet, and I don't know what to do with them anymore.
Yes, I know. That's hard. That's a really hard one. And that's the kind of thing where sending it to digital doesn't really... It doesn't do it. I mean, it does. You know they're there and you're not going to lose the photos. But I found ourselves, without having printed photos, it's just hard to – you don't go back and look at digital photos too often.
No. And
you want those physical memories.
And it's funny because the digital ones, I'm so paranoid about losing that I have them backed up in about 3 different places online. God forbid anything happens. So I've got them on my phone. I've got them on my computer. I've got them in Amazon Cloud Drive. I've got them in iCloud, iPhoto, iCloud. So if anything happens, but then to me, that feels like more clutter. That feels like there's one more area that I have to purge all of my photos from.
Yeah. Now, Marie Kondo does talk about photos. I don't know if you remember. You know, that's the thing. There's so much packed into this little book that this is one of the only books that I've reread, and I'm on reading number 3 right now.
Okay.
And each time I find something different. But there's a great index in the back, so you can go to photos, which is on page 118. And she says, leave them for last. Mm-hmm. And I think she means truly last, and that's probably what we would all want to do anyway, because yes, it is the most difficult thing. But also, she has a really good point, at least in the way that I have printed photos. So we took a physical film camera on our honeymoon, which was 3 weeks long. And I think we have, 15 or 18 rolls of film from our honeymoon. But as Marie Kondo points out, and she's not wrong, I have 27 photos from one particular place. You know, I have 5 from another. I have 7 from another. And it's what she says is to keep about 5 per day of a special trip. That unexciting photos of scenery that you can't even place belong in the garbage. The meaning of a photo lies in the excitement and joy you feel when taking it. In many cases, the prints developed afterward have already outlived their purpose. And I think for me that that's very true. I look at all these photos of castles because we went to England and Wales. And I can't tell you one castle from another. So do I need to keep them all? Do I need to have, you know, 15 photos from one castle? Probably not.
No, I'd agree with that. Our honeymoon, we went to Antigua for our honeymoon. And, you know, how many pictures of palm trees can you really keep? Or, you know, here's this colorful lizard that was crawling along our balcony. Or it was beautiful, but it's not something I'm going to go back and really look through again.
Yeah. Yeah. That will definitely be the last thing that I tackle. But the other one that's sort of daunting to me are kitchen items, you know, pots and pans and mixing spoons and measuring cups and all of that that I've just accumulated over the years that take up so much space. And I'm sure I would end up with some empty cabinets if I were to do that. But just the idea of pulling everything out into the middle of the kitchen floor for a whole day and trying to get rid of and get stuff back in place by the end of the day so that the kitchen can function is something that I'm kind of dreading.
Yeah, I have to go through it because I'm the one who cooks in our family, and I have to go through because I use a lot of the stuff in our kitchen. We don't have a whole lot, but I know we actually use quite a bit of the things in our kitchen. It's the things that have broken that I'm still holding on to because they sort of work that I really need to go through and get rid of. Obviously, you've stuck with it since finishing the book. Is it something you try to get to every day, every weekend, as you get to it?
As I get to it, as I have time.
Yeah.
I sort of mentally break down how long I think something's going to take me. And if I have time, I'll do it. So, like, we have one linen closet, and it was really easy because I decided that everybody was getting two sets of sheets and, you know, a set of towels. And so it made life really easy because it was mostly just discarding things. And really, when I thought about it, what does everybody need? We need two sets of sheets and a set of towels and we didn't need much more than that. I have a set of towels and sheets for the guest room, guest bed, whatever. It's in my office. And that's it. So that was easy. That took an hour. And I have a lovely linen closet now. So those little kinds of things, I think, are things that you can do in spurts as the feeling grabs you. And, of course, now it's finally nice weather here in the Northeast. And so it is inspiring me again to do more. In the dregs of winter, I wanted no part of it.
One thing, I don't know if you've tackled this also, but one thing I ended up doing was going through my drawers and pulling out all the excess cords to various electronic devices, old USB cords, power cords, and just tossing all of them.
I sorted.
You sorted.
I tossed a lot. But the one thing that I did keep were USB cords. Because I never seem to find the right one. So I have them kind of rubber banded according to the end of the size of the USB thing, the other tip.
Oh, okay.
And they're just in one drawer. But the one thing that I did throw out, I had a lot of sort of power adapters that I had no idea what they meant to. And so those kinds of things where, you know, you plug it in the back and then it's got the big power block on the end.
Yeah.
If it wasn't clearly labeled and I couldn't put it directly with the adding machine or whatever it was I had that it went to, then it went out.
Yeah,
that's. I also, for some reason, kept all of my old cell phones.
Oh wow!
Which are gone, and all kinds of, like, I had my old BlackBerry. I had a bunch of electronics like that that for whatever reason went in the drawer. And I think part of it is because they're not that easy to get rid of. They're really not things that should go in the trash. Those kinds of electronics, they should go to a place that recycles them responsibly.
Yeah,
and so that's just an added inconvenience.
One thing I did was I donated to, I think it's Bath and Body Works does it. They hold a drive for battered women, and it's a cell phone drive. And so you come in and you just dump your old cell phone in the box, and then those are given out to women in shelters who may need them for emergency purposes. So that's what I did with our old cell phones.
Yeah, mine were like from the 90s. So, you know,
oh, yeah. Old flip phones and stuff. Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, you never know. Someone may want to relearn graffiti.
Yeah, there you go. I bet you could still do that.
Why do you think this book has become such a hit compared to other self-help books?
I think it's kind of all of the things that we talked about in the beginning. It's the package, you know, the way it looks, the way it feels. It's calming to look at. The font that they used is great. It's all lowercase. It doesn't feel intimidating. And I think that goes in hand with the way that it was merchandised in bookstores to start. If this looked like your traditional self-help, you know, nobody knew who Marie Kondo was. It's not like a Susie Orman or I'm trying to think of other self-help people who kind of have big names, but it's not like somebody looked at this and knew what it was. So if it looked like a traditional self-help book, I think it's your first sense is, well, you know, who's that and why do I care? And I'm not sure it would have gotten at the front counter in your neighborhood bookstore or in your Barnes & Noble or in other places. I think this book is, you know, in places that don't sell a lot of books. Like I think it might be in Urban Outfitters and, you know, those kinds of places too. So there's that. It's kind of in people's faces. You kind of wonder the life-changing magic of tidying up. Like that's not a self-helpy title. It's not, it doesn't sound practical.
Right. It's almost so absurd. You have to look and see what they're advertising.
Yeah. So I think the whole package works. Also, there was a ton of publicity when it came out. Marie Kondo does not speak very strong English. And so there were a lot of articles about her, but they interviewed her editor or other people that worked with her when the book was published here in the United States. And a lot of that publicity was like the story that you mentioned earlier, where Marie Kondo went to New York Magazine's editor and helped her work through it. And so it wasn't just interviewing the author about the book, it was that writer's experience with having Marie Kondo there to help her. So those kinds of success stories really helped drive interest in it as well. And then there's just the whole word of mouth thing. You know, it worked for me. Oh my gosh, it makes sense. I have to tell six people that I run into. They buy the book, they tell six people, and it just kind of goes from there. But ultimately, I think it's the book. It's her voice. It's her approach. If it wasn't a good book, it doesn't matter how good it would look or how good the publicity was, it wouldn't have sold as well.
Yeah, I think word of mouth is a huge seller for this. I hear this discussed all the time. I heard someone on my subway train talking about it, and it took everything in my power not to turn around and go, oh, you read that book too?
Yeah, and actually, I've seen people in online forums use Kondo as a verb. To condo. I've condoed my closet. I'm condoing my bathroom this weekend. It's really taken on a life of its own. And I think, you know, part of it is also timing. I think it really speaks to what's happening in the world right now. A lot of people are, you know, you look at the tiny house movement. You know, a lot of us are just thinking about after years and years of rampant consumerism, I think so many of us are kind of rethinking how much stuff we need, and mm-hmm. what do we want to, you know, what do we want the future to look like? You know, I have, luckily my, you know, my mother is healthy and doing fine, but the last thing I would want to do is, you know, clean out her apartment and have to sort of figure out what to do with her stuff. And so I don't want my kids to have to figure out someday what to do with all my stuff. It's just, why do I need that much stuff?
Right.
So I think there's a lot of this sort of thinking that's happening, and it all kind of works together. The time is right.
I'm very skeptical as a reader, and when I hear certain things regarding self-help, I just think, that's a load of hooey. But this is so deceivingly simple in its methods of, does it bring you joy? I was like, you know, I can get on board with that, because I'm not looking for complicated. I'm not looking for a trip to the Container Store, and I just want to be able to enjoy the stuff I have and get rid of the stuff I don't enjoy. That's all I want.
And I do think, you know, it's also low risk. It's not going to hurt anything to try it. You know,
no, it's low
buy-in. At the very most, you're going to spend $17 on the book.
And she even says, if you don't like the book, donate it, give it away.
Exactly. And even if you have, if you do like the book, and in her part about, you know, getting rid of your books and tidying your books, she says, if you're done with this book, pass it on.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is great, because then you give it to someone who becomes an evangelist.
Right.
And starts talking about it to their friends.
Or you discuss it on your podcast, and then someone becomes an evangelist.
Yeah, but this is a book, actually, like I said, I'm on my third reread, and I'm getting something different from it each time, which, again, is deceptive. You look at it, it's small. I think the first time I read it in one sitting. But until I actually put some of the ideas into practice, I missed a whole lot of things. And so I'm finding those now to be a little bit more relevant. So this is not one that I'm going to give away. And I'm not a rereader at all. So the fact that I have already read this two and a half times, I think says a lot. It is, you said, deceptively simple, and it's true. And it's very, very powerful.
Definitely. Yeah, this isn't one I give away, but this is one that I donate to others. I lend out to others.
And it's a fabulous gift if you don't insult somebody.
Yes.
If you're giving it to the right person who will take it with the right sort of spirit, I think it's a great gift.
Anne, thank you very much for coming on. This has been a total blast for me.
Well, thank you. Thanks for inviting me. Thanks for your support of Books on the Nightstand. Thanks for your support of this book and spreading the word. I think this is very cool that you're doing a whole episode on this book. It's not anything I would have thought of. And hopefully your listeners will enjoy it.
Well, I was sort of inspired by your episode of A Little Life, which I'm 200 pages into and preparing myself for an emotional train wreck. But
yeah, you're right about that spot where it gets it gets great, but it gets heavy.
Yeah, but I love the idea of devoting an episode to a book, especially a book like this that I think warrants a lot of discussion because it can be polarizing.
Yeah, and a lot of this, you know, it's Marie Kondo's theory. There's not a lot of scientific data, you know, to back up some of the ideas that she has. Her data is that she's worked with thousands of people who she claims have never gone back to the old way, and that's her personal data. But, you know, if you're a science guy who needs all the, you know, peer review studies and things like that, it might be a little bit unsatisfying. But if you're somebody who believes in the personal anecdotes and evidence to back it up, then it totally delivers.
Yeah, that sold it for me when she wrote that out of all of her clients, nobody has ever rebounded. So where can people find you?
Mostly on Twitter. I'm at Ann Kingman on Twitter. That's AnnKingman, no E in Ann. And our podcast goes up every Tuesday night, and that's available at booksonthenightstand.com. And you can find it on iTunes or Stitcher or any of your favorite podcatchers. Mm-hmm. And I love being able to talk to an audience who's already listening to this on a podcast because I don't have to explain what a podcast is.
Nice. This has been Covered with special guest Ann Kingman. If you like what you've heard, please leave us a review on iTunes, as it's the best way to bump us up and help others to find us there. And if you really like what you've heard and want to hear more, please contribute to our Patreon campaign at patreon.com/covered. We've got a lot of great perks at various levels, so please consider throwing your money at us. And remember, don't judge a book till it's covered.